Hey everyone, and welcome back. We'd love to do these deep dives on Supreme Court cases, and this one really gets at like these huge questions about individual rights and,
Absolutely.
What the government can do in a crisis.
For sure.
We're talking like contracts and the Constitution and the Great Depression. So like,
yeah, the setting of this case is so important, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the most like challenging periods in American history.
So for sure.
And think about it. The Great Depression, banks are failing. People are losing their jobs.
Yeah. People getting kicked out of their homes.
Exactly. Homes are being foreclosed left and right. It's like,
yeah, total chaos.
Yeah. And that chaos is what brings us to this legal battle.
Okay. So to like break this down, we've got excerpts from both the majority and the dissenting opinions in this case.
Right.
Home Building and Loan Association versus Blaisdell.
Versus Blaisdell,
Decided in 1934. And it really comes down to this law that Minnesota passed in 1933 called the Minnesota Mortgage Moratorium Law.
Yeah, they were trying to do something to help all these people losing their homes.
Right. So this law, like, how did this even work?
Yeah. So the whole point of this law was to give homeowners some breathing room when they were facing foreclosure.
Okay.
It wasn't saying like, poof, your debt is gone.
Yeah.
But it gave them more time to get back on their feet.
So they didn't just like stop all the mortgage payments?
Not exactly. So what they did was they let courts extend the time homeowners had to pay off their mortgages.
Okay.
You know, before they'd get foreclosed on. And during that extra time, they still had to make payments.
Gotcha.
But it was like paying rent on the property.
Okay.
So the lenders weren't totally left high and dry.
So it sounds like Minnesota was really trying to like walk this fine line.
Yeah.
Between, you know, helping people stay in their homes.
Right.
While still like recognizing that the lenders had some rights too.
They had to find a balance somehow.
Yeah. Did it work?
Well, not everyone was happy about it. I mean, almost immediately, a mortgage lender challenged the law, said it was like totally unconstitutional, you know, violating the contract clause.
Right. Yeah.
That clause is basically saying states can't mess with contracts.
Yeah. You make a deal, you got to stick to it.
Exactly. End of story. So they were like, Minnesota, you've gone too far, even with this whole crisis going on.
I mean, I bet that made sense to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, contracts are kind of the foundation of how our economy works, right?
100%. The sanctity of contracts is, like, super important for stability, predictability in any market.
Right. So, but the big question here is, does that principle, like, always apply even when there's a national emergency?
That's the heart of it right there.
Yeah. So what does the Supreme Court say?
Well,
did they like side with the homeowner or the lender?
So it was a close one, but the court actually upheld the Minnesota law 5-4 decision. Chief Justice Hughes wrote the majority opinion, and they really like acknowledged how extreme the Great Depression was, you know?
Yeah.
And they leaned on the whole idea of the state's police power. You know that authority that states have to protect their people's health and safety and welfare?
Uh-huh.
And they said that sometimes that power means you got to interfere with contracts.
Okay, so are they saying that even the Constitution, like, has to bend a little bit when there's something huge, like the Great Depression going on?
Basically, yeah, they were saying that, but it's not like they made this decision lightly.
Right.
They looked at everything really carefully, you know, what was going on in Minnesota, and they paid attention to how the state Supreme Court described how bad the crisis was.
Yeah.
And they looked at the Minnesota law itself and saw that it wasn't, like, just a freebie for homeowners.
Right. They still had to pay something.
Exactly. They had to make those rental payments and the debt was still there. They didn't erase it.
Yeah.
It was temporary, you know, meant to deal with a very specific emergency.
Okay. So the majority was in favor of Minnesota, but it was close. So what about those dissenting justices?
Right.
Like, what were their arguments? Were they just like being super stubborn about the rules?
Oh, no, not at all. They had some really serious concerns.
Okay. Like what?
Well, Justice Sutherland led the dissent. And they were really worried about setting a bad precedent.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
You know, like if you start making exceptions, where does it end?
Right.
They said that the Constitution's protection of contracts was absolute.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be weakened no matter what, even in emergencies.
I can see that side of it, too. I mean, if you start changing the rules all the time.
Right.
Then, like, nobody knows what's going on.
It creates chaos, uncertainty. People can't trust the system.
Exactly. So did they have any, like, historical examples to back up their concerns?
They did. They pointed to the history of the contract clause itself.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it was adopted after the Revolutionary War.
Okay.
Back then, states were passing all these laws that messed with debts and contracts, caused a lot of problems, economic instability.
Right.
And the people who wrote the Constitution wanted to prevent that from happening again.
So they saw this Minnesota law as like potentially causing that same kind of mess all over again.
That was their fear, you know? They thought that if the law was upheld, it'd make businesses uncertain and weaken the whole legal system.
Right, like why even bother having contracts? They could just be changed whenever.
They said that the government has to respect contracts even when things are tough.
Wow. So we've got these two totally different ways of looking at it.
Right.
You know, the majority's focused on the crisis happening right now.
Uh-huh.
And the state's power to protect its people, and then the dissent is like worried about the long-term consequences for the rule of law.
Exactly. It's this clash of perspectives. You know, both sides had strong arguments based on how they interpreted the Constitution.
Yeah.
And there are different visions of like how much power the government should have versus individual rights.
This is why this case is so important.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just some fight about mortgages. It's about these big questions of power and individual rights and what the government should do in a crisis.
Absolutely. You're totally getting it.
And to better understand why the majority decided the way they did.
Yeah.
It might help to think about this analogy that Justice Olson from the Minnesota Supreme Court used.
Oh, yeah.
He compared the whole economic crisis to a natural disaster.
Right.
Okay, so how does a natural disaster connect to contracts?
Well, think about what happens after a hurricane or an earthquake. You know, states have to do all sorts of things,
yeah.
Like suspend some laws or regulations to deal with the emergency.
Right.
Justice Olson basically argued that the Great Depression was just as bad as a natural disaster.
Oh, wow.
You know, economically, and that it justified taking those kinds of extraordinary actions.
Okay, so like if a state can say, okay, we're suspending these rules after a hurricane.
Right.
Why can't they give people a break from their contracts during a massive economic meltdown?
Exactly. That was his point.
Yeah. I can see how that would be pretty persuasive.
It was a powerful way to frame the whole issue. It made people think about whether the contract clause was really meant to be like no exceptions ever.
Right.
Or if there were times, even if they're really rare, when the public good is more important than sticking to every single contract.
Man, this whole case brings up so many questions.
It does.
Like, where do you draw the line between the state's power to act and protecting people's individual rights?
Yeah. That's the million-dollar question, and it's something we're still dealing with today. You know, the Blaisdell case didn't give states a blank check to just change contracts whenever they want.
Right.
But it did give some guidelines, you know, emphasizing that if they're going to interfere, it has to be temporary
mm-hmm.
and targeted, and there has to be a real public emergency.
So it's not like a free-for-all.
No, there's a high bar for justifying that kind of intervention.
It sounds like this case, even though it was supposed to like settle things,
mm-hmm.
really just opened up even more questions.
Yeah.
Like, what exactly counts as an emergency that lets you change contracts?
Like,
and who gets to decide that? Is it the courts, the legislature, the people?
Those are some of the core issues that legal experts and policymakers are still debating to this day.
But one thing's for sure, this Blaisdell case reminds us that the Constitution isn't some like static thing.
No, it's a living document.
It's always being interpreted and reinterpreted,
mm-hmm.
you know, as we face new problems and our values change.
Exactly. It's not just some dusty old book on a shelf. It has to adapt.
Yeah. So it's more like a process than like a set of rules
right.
that had to change with the times.
Yeah. That's what makes studying constitutional law so interesting.
It's yeah.
dynamic, messy, and it's always changing.
You've definitely made me see this whole case in a new light.
Glad to hear it.
What started as a story about mortgages in the Great Depression turned into like this deep exploration of some of the biggest questions about government and power.
That's what these deep dives are all about, you
yeah.
know? Going beyond the surface and getting into those complexities and nuances and the questions that never really go away.
We've only scratched the surface of this case, though.
Oh,
so I really encourage everyone listening to check out the source material for yourselves. Read the whole opinions and come to your own conclusions.
Yeah.
You might even disagree with what the court decided.
That's the great thing about these legal issues, you know?
Yeah.
There's rarely a simple answer. It's about understanding the different arguments and the history and then wrestling with those big questions yourself.
That's what makes it so interesting. So what are your final thoughts on this case? Like, what should our listeners really take away from all this?
I think the big takeaway here is that the Blaisdell case is still relevant today.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's a reminder that we're always trying to find that balance between individual rights and what's good for society as a whole.
Especially when times are tough.
Exactly.
It makes you wonder, like, does this case offer any guidance for dealing with similar situations now?
That's a really good question, and it's one that's still being debated. You know, The Blaisdell case didn't just give states permission to rewrite contracts whenever they want.
Right. It wasn't a free pass.
Exactly. The court made it clear that any changes have to be temporary,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be specific, you know, targeted, and they have to be in response to a real public emergency.
Okay, so like a genuine crisis.
Right. It's not enough to just say, oh, things are tough, let's change some contracts.
So the bar for justifying that kind of action is still pretty high.
Absolutely. The Blaisdell case created this framework for how to think about these situations.
Okay.
A framework that emphasizes things like proportionality, you know, making sure the response is appropriate to the problem.
Right.
Due process, so people's rights are protected, and a real need for emergency action.
So it's more than just saying, hey, there's an emergency, let's change everything.
Right. It has to be a carefully considered decision.
It seems like this case, as much as it tried to provide answers, really just brought up even more questions.
It does.
Like, where do you draw the line between the state's police power and protecting contracts under the Constitution?
Right. Like, where's the boundary?
And how do we even define an emergency that would let you change contracts in the first place?
Yeah.
And who gets to make that call? The legislature, the courts, the people?
These are all questions that legal experts and policymakers are still grappling with.
It's a lot to think about.
It is, but the Blaisdell case reminds us that the Constitution isn't just some fixed set of rules.
Yeah.
It's a living document, something that's constantly being interpreted and reinterpreted as we face new challenges and our values as a society change.
So it's not static. It has to adapt.
Exactly. It's not just some words on a page. It's a process.
A process that evolves with the times.
Precisely. And that's what makes studying constitutional law so fascinating.
It's definitely a lot more complex than I thought it was.
It is. It's dynamic. It's messy.
Yeah.
And it's always changing.
I have to say, you've given me a whole new perspective on this case.
Excited to hear.
What started as a story about mortgages during the Great Depression turned it into this deep dive into some of the biggest questions about our government and the limits of its power.
And that's what these deep dives are all about, you know, going beyond the surface level and really digging into the complexities and nuances.
Yeah. And the questions that never seem to go away.
Exactly. The questions that keep us thinking and debating.
I know I'm going to be thinking about this for a while.
Me too. It's a case that stays with you.
Really just scratched the surface here, though.
Yeah.
So I want to encourage everyone listening to go check out the source material for yourselves.
Yeah.
Read the full opinions, the majority, the dissent, and form your own conclusions.
Don't just take our word for it.
You might even disagree with what the Supreme Court decided.
Absolutely. And that's part of what makes these issues so interesting.
There's rarely one right answer.
Right. It's about engaging with the different arguments, the historical context,
yeah.
and figuring out where you stand.
That's what makes it a conversation.
Exactly. And it's a conversation that's worth having.
Well, until next time, keep diving deep.